This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Michael Pavlich.
Well, he's been described as the most conservative vice president, perhaps in the last 40 years. He's fiscally conservative, he's fiercely patriotic, he's pro-gun and pro-life. He's a deeply religious man whose beliefs at times sit uncomfortably alongside the rhetoric of Donald Trump. He's the former governor of Indiana, Mike Pence is his name, and he's our person of interest, our profile person this week. So if you'd like to join us, if you've got any thoughts on Mike Pence, give us a ring, 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222, the text number 0437-774-774. Does Mike Pence hold any ambitions to one day be president? And what sort of president would he be if he had to hold down the top job? Peter Eisner is the co-author of a book called The Shadow President, The Truth About Mike Pence, and he joins us on the program this morning. Good morning there. How are you going?
Good morning, Michael. Good to be speaking with you.
Thank you. You too, Peter, as well. Just to start off by asking you, just how important was Mike Pence on the Republican presidential ticket at the last federal election?
You know, it's hard to gauge. He was brought in to give a sober and comforting alternative to the Donald Trump that we know and that we need not describe. He's the antithesis in presence as a human being than Donald Trump. Quiet, well-coiffed, not getting in anyone's way or anyone's face. And, the biggest descriptor that you always come up with Mike Pence is nice. So to give that kind of opposition to what Donald Trump was helpful. And also, obviously, there was the idea that he was the religious, moral alternative to Donald Trump, which kind of balanced out and gave a calm sense to those who might be frightened by Trump.
We hear a lot about the vote in the Bible Belt and the religious part of America, and they're obviously going to be attracted to someone like Pence. That would have been a big filler for Donald Trump in his election, that the fact that he was able to garner all those votes from that section of the community or section of the population.
Yeah, definitely Pence fit in there. But even so, the Trump phenomenon beyond, really, I think, what Pence's value was. As we worked on this book and trying to describe who Pence is, I think we found that in many ways, there's much more of a diverse right-wing traditional evangelical movement than Pence represents. I spoke to a lot of young evangelicals who consider themselves nevertheless to be progressive and oppose Pence's type of extreme conservative view on life. So it's not as simple. It's quite a complicated story in which Pence certainly does provide a grounding that kind of holds the floating Trump down to the ground, but I'm not sure how much he helps.
All right, okay. Now, he's from Indiana. He was governor of Indiana for a while there. He's not the first vice president to come from Indiana. The most recent, there's been several, but most recent that I can think of and people would know was Dan Quayle, who was a pretty colourful character himself.
Definitely. They had a lot in common. And as a matter of fact, in a different era in American politics, Dan Quayle's wife, was revealed to have been connected to an end-of-days evangelical group. And that the very existence of that as a possibility almost deep-sixed him as a candidate, because it seemed frightening that somebody so close to the presidency might espouse end-of-days kind of evangelical views, especially somebody that might eventually have...
Top job.
Yeah, the top job and contact with the nuclear codes. But here we have Pence, who is surrounded by extreme evangelical preachers, many of whom he calls his mentors. And there is an end of days quality to some of these folks. So in many ways, Pence is a latter day, well-coiffed, well-behaved version of what Quayle was.
bit quieter, though. It doesn't give us quite as many quotes or misquotes, if you like, perhaps.
That's true. There, you know, there was a misspelling of the word potato when Quayle was vice president, as I recall. But the fact is that Pence has a couple things going on. One is, behind the scenes, he's much more active than people would say. You know, when Trump was running for president, his son offered the vice presidency to John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, and said that you as vice president will be the most powerful vice president in U.S. history. Kasich turned it down. Pence took it. And I think that he's quietly, in that quiet way that you described, Michael, is really taking a large amount of power out of the chaos that we see in the White House and appointing people and making strategic moves that are outside of what might be seen in the spotlight.
Look, you know, it's not very often. There haven't been many vice presidents that have gone on to take the top job to become president. In fact, it's not that common at all, really. Does he harbour ambitions to one day be president, and is there any chance that he actually will be president one day?
I think that the exact number is around 25% of vice presidents, one way or another, became president, okay. which would be, you know, out of 45, maybe, 12 or 15. But from what we were able to look at, Pence, as a young white American from the heartland of the United States, saw himself very early as a possible president. He spoke about it in high school. He spoke about it in college. And I think that his behavior, trying not to do anything untoward that might later trouble his biography, shows that. He was very cautious. And later in life, even when he was in the House of Representatives, one could see that he was angling in that direction. We spoke to an intern in the Congress who recalled him taking the interns around the Capitol and looking around where the presidents are inaugurated and saying, well, I might like to have the inauguration on this side of the Capitol, not on that side of the Capitol. The lighting might be better for me. You know, those kind of things. You feel that was there for a long time. And I think that his behavior right now is showing that he's doing everything he can to be available for the presidency should anything happen, or after 8 years, if he can simply succeed Trump.
So, I mean, that would have how it would have to play out, you would think, unless he gets appointed midterm and has to step up and replace Donald Trump. He would have to go there in 2024. Do you think there's any chance that he could be elected by the population at large, or are his views too extreme for the American people to sort of embrace?
It might have been easier to answer a question like that before 2016, because there were many of us that said, well, you know, Donald Trump is a blowhard, and how could he ever be elected president? So for me to be able to answer the question and say, no, there's no way he could be president of the United States, well, of course, you know, he could be elected. There's reasons to say he couldn't be elected, because he doesn't have the same kind of base, despite everything that Trump has, and there's a lot of criticism of him coming from the right as well as coming from the left that would make it difficult to imagine him getting through an election easily. But it depends on his opponents, and it depends on possibly help from social media, and the Russians apparently are still out there trying to make a difference.
We'll go back to the start a little bit, Peter, and people will be probably surprised to know that originally his leanings were towards the Democratic side of politics.
An Irish heritage family that came to the United States in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and they settled in the Midwest in Chicago, and there was a tendency toward, in the crowd of Irish Americans in Chicago, you know, fighting for workers' rights and everything, to be Democrat, and that flowed over for a long time, and Pence, as a young man, was a great admirer of President Kennedy and a young Democrat. And slowly, though, in the age of Ronald Reagan, and then eventually in his conversion to an evangelical as a young man in his 20s, became more and more conservative. But a lot of the rest of the family remained Democrat, as a matter of fact.
There you go. You know, I believe his parents weren't too happy about him signing up to become an evangelical Christian either. They come from a Catholic background.
All Catholics, indeed. And there's a liberalism that came across, not only among his parents, but his. I think that his grandparents were extremely influential. And there was a liberal democratic sense to growing up before things changed, yes.
All right. And in his role as governor of Indiana, he made some pretty, a lot of decisions. In fact, he was very busy in his role as governor of Indiana. A lot of the policies that he brought in didn't necessarily sit, and eventually some of them were removed. But he was very fiscally conservative. He went in there and tried to make a lot of tax cuts and stuff. I've got to ask you all these years later, how has the Indiana economy, washed up after the period of Pence being the governor?
The one thing one has to look at, and I find this possibly the most telling part of the story of Pence as an early politician, his attempts to govern in Indiana, after all, in a conservative state in which both houses of the state legislature, the House of Representatives and the Indiana Senate, were all Republican, completely controlled by Republicans, and yet he came across as being more extreme and too extreme for the Republicans in the state legislature. So when he tried to put in a tax cut, they limited the tax cut. When he tried to spend or not spend on certain things, they tried to hold it back. And after he left, within weeks, people were saying that the era of Mike Pence as governor of Indiana will be soon forgotten and soon erased. It was not a successful governorship.
So, and what about the economy? Was it successful in that regard at all? Did his cuts and his fiscal conservatism, did that make Indiana a richer place in the end?
I think that Indiana went along with the rest of the country in general. You know, 2008, throughout the United States, there was a recession and a collapse, and Indiana suffered from that. Indiana has heavy industry and such, and workers suffered. But in the aftermath and then in the recovery, including recovery that was federally mandated, including recovery of such industries as the automobile industry, which does have an important role in Indiana, recovered, but not so much because of Mike Pence, but more because of national politics and, one has to say, the arrival of President Obama in 2009.
I've got a question here that says, Steve, who says, please ask your guest the meaning of shadow president. Unlike Aussie politics, shadow isn't an opposition counterpart. Here in Australia, we call the opposition party shadow cabinet ministers, etc. This is a different meaning of shadow that you're putting here in the title of your book, The Shadow President, isn't it? Do you want to try and explain that, Peter?
Sure, yeah, definitely. I understand the great difference in meaning. And for us, it means a couple of things. One is that he's standing in the shadow of Donald Trump, and in that shadow, he's not daring to do anything visible that is going to make Trump angry, basically. On the one hand, he's the only person in the government that can't be fired by Trump, at least not until 2020, if Trump were to decide not to make him vice presidential candidate again. And on the other hand, he does nothing visibly outside of that shadow to challenge Trump, even in his most vituperative, extreme views and statements. But on the other hand, I think there's another word that actually, another way of looking at shadow, which actually comes closer to the Australian way of looking at shadow, in the sense that he's actually legislating in a certain way, and he's actually influencing government because the cameras and the lights are often not on. He's actually doing things, and he's doing things such as appointing people in various parts of the government when Trump is not interested or paying attention, like in healthcare, Secretary of Health, Medicare, Medicaid, and also having an influence on the judiciary, pushing through and supporting the most conservative possible of judicial candidates, not only for the Supreme Court, but also for local local federal courtships. So he's working in the shadows at the same time.
My understanding is that he's broken from tradition there a little bit and made a number of deciding votes that perhaps someone in his position wouldn't normally have made. Perhaps you're suggesting there that they were motivated by political gains, perhaps.
I think that everything he's doing is motivated by political gain. I don't think there's much else as vice president that one can see. You know, in his role as president of the Senate, which the vice president of the United States is, he's voted several times to break a tie, which the vice president is able to do, and in one case he did so in approving the appointment of the Secretary of Education, DeVos, his great supporter, and very controversial. It's the first time in history that a vice president had broken a tie toward the appointment of a cabinet secretary.
And he's done it several times, but he's not alone. It has been done by other vice presidents many times. Perhaps he's just a little bit above the averages on how many times he's putting his vote forward in that regard. I'll just come back a little bit and ask you about his religious background and his religious beliefs and how they sit alongside Donald Trump's rhetoric and even some of the behaviour of Donald Trump. I know when the election campaign was on, all the allegations, which were proved later, came out about Donald Trump and the things he said on the bus. I believe, you know, that would have rubbed up against Mike Pence the wrong way entirely. How was he able to resolve those two things? You know, his religion saying one thing and, you know, what he had to do as far as his ambitions go represent another thing. How was he able to sort of compromise those two positions?
Well, the public way of doing it is that he doesn't show that he compromises them all. He just like 100% supports Trump. But in the course of doing our interviews, and by the way, we tried to speak to Pence, and we didn't get a yes or a no. We kind of got a two-step, more or less, without an answer or that ever came through. But I was able to speak privately to sources very close to Pence. And I asked that very question: how can he possibly, after the famous tapes and that came out, and also the information about the prostitutes and other such stories, 18 women that have charged that he made unwanted advances, how can he support that? And the answer from one of the more prominent people close to Pence said that when he was asked to run for to accept the vice presidency, he and his wife went off and prayed and thought about it and decided that this is what God wanted them to do. And once they did that, he was all in. And once he was all in, he knew what he was dealing with and he had to accept it. So I would translate that into a complete moral compromise, and many others do the same.
What about he himself and his own morals? I mean, he talks about being heavily influenced by Jesus and Christ, and it's hard to imagine Jesus being a gun enthusiast. But Mike Pence certainly has been very pro-gun. I mean, how does that sit with him as well? I mean, you know, we've got these teachings of Jesus, which is pacifism and love and empathy, and that yet he's out there sort of more or less displaying the opposite to that in a way.
Well, that ties in with the larger question of evangelical preaching in the United States and what right-wing politics has become. And so So such things as the use of guns, such things as climate change, such things as questions on homosexuality and other such things, and you know, those become the mantle of a religious movement in the United States where they might not otherwise be. So how do you separate Pence from the rest of that movement? I don't think you do. I think he's just an extremely traditional, extreme religious figure that espouses the most extreme views, as do many other people on the religious right. That's just where he sits.
Owen's joined us this morning. G'day, Owen.
Good morning, Michael and Peter. My question goes, and Trump has on occasion snapped at Pence in some of his public comments. So my two questions are, what's the relationship between, as far as you can gather, between Trump and Pence? And is there any chance that Trump may want to replace him in 2020?
Peter?
Okay, so a couple of ways to look at it. One is that Pence has frequent and regular meetings with Trump and is an advisor to Trump to the degree to which Trump listens to anyone. He's been also called upon by members of Congress to go in and try to reason with Trump when they needed political decisions to be made. So he stands there as that kind of break on Trump's most extreme positions when sought to do that, and sometimes he's able to break through, but one would say that most of the time Trump is his own singular advisor and won't listen to anyone. At the same time, Pence runs very carefully along the line of knowing that Trump worries about people of power around him, and he won't accept it. Pence made a mistake last year by taking on briefly a foreign policy advisor who was also the foreign policy advisor of Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador at the time, and it came out quickly that this advisor had been a never Trump Republican, and Trump found out and called out Pence. Couldn't believe that Pence would ever do such a thing as to bring in a never Trumper into his own office, and the man was summarily dismissed. But one gets the feeling that Trump doesn't forget slights of that kind, and there are suggestions rather than Trump being replaced, that Pence might be replaced for a different vice presidential candidate, with everyone saying that, yes, Pence was helpful at the time, but Trump is the one that carries the ticket.
Is there any way that Donald Trump might be threatened by Pence in the way he's maneuvering in the background?
It's an interesting question. Threatened to the extent that Pence has been traveling all around the United States and all around the world, but in his trips, particularly around the United States, state by state, he makes the most local of visits with local political precinct captains, speaking on local radio, speaking with local television, and he's very practiced on that, having been a radio broadcaster and sometimes TV broadcaster himself. And in so doing, he's creating his own base, even though he's traveling on behalf of the Trump re-election campaign. He carefully says at each of these speeches, "I bring greetings from the President of the United States," and then goes into his own stock speech. But one can see that in all of these meetings, what he's doing is ingratiating himself on the most local of levels. Should there be any opening for any reason for Trump not to be available, not so much as a threat, but so much as a replacement, for instance, should the Mueller report come out and be more devastating than anyone can possibly believe, or should for some reason Trump depart the scene for any other purpose.
I've got a text here that says, can Peter please explain for me the Russian influence and motivation, re the president's selection in the US? I hear plenty about it but don't understand. Thanks from John. I mean, that's a little bit complicated there. Obviously, the Mueller probe's going on, but has Pence come out and said anything about the Mueller probe itself, or and as well as that, anything about the relationship between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump?
Pence, early on, got into a lot of trouble by denying everything and about any relationship. You know, a television interviewer once asked him, just months after the inauguration, do you know of any connection between Donald Trump and the Trump campaign and the Russians? And he says, absolutely not, as the answer. And why would there be? And various other, of course, that's proven to be amazingly false, with more than 100 separate contacts between Trump campaign and Trump administration figures that belie what Pence said. But beyond that, Pence has some liabilities there himself. One was that he was the one standing saying that Michael Flynn, who is after all his number two in the transition to the Trump administration, had never had any substantive conversation with the Russian ambassador to the United States at the time. And that's proven not to be true. And also later, Pence famously denied that Trump had fired James Comey, the head of the FBI, because of the Russia campaign. And of course, Trump himself on television a few days later came out and said, well, that's obviously why I fired him, to get rid of the Russia problem. So Pence, since then, he's, you know, avoided almost all television of any type other than on television such as Fox television that is happy to trumpet Trump's positives. Pence has not recently said anything other than to support the president and to say that it's a witch hunt, and agree that that there's no reason for Mueller, who he says should have already finished his investigations, to come up with anything serious.
If he does harbour ambitions to be president, maybe part of him sort of thinking, ooh, it could be a chance coming up here. Let's have a chat to Gary. G'day, Gary.
I've got the shirt, Trump, Pence, etc. Someone sent it over to me from the States. Gary, Indiana, I think, is one of the areas where they make all the school buses. Is that correct, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right. Now, if you go back to when Gary Hart was running, going to run against Bush, who was the nominee. He was the vice president to Ronald Reagan for two terms. Now, they found out he was a womanizer, etc., and the Democrats said, oh, no, we don't need that. Now, the bloke who succeeded Bush was one of the greatest womanizers in the world, Bill Clinton, right? He got impeached. Now, I think it's basically trying to impeach Donald Trump, I think, is... won't happen, because I don't think the left, the Democrats, have got the MO to do it.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? Obviously, I mean, what does it mean anyway that they did impeach Bill Clinton, but he still held on to the presidency? So, I mean, impeachment in itself is you know, what exactly it means and how it affects the presidency is one thing. But, I mean, as we just heard there from Gary, all about Gary, it's a pretty interesting question that he'll be faced with.
Well, a couple of things. You know, it seems like every president is more or less inoculated by the experiences of the previous president. You know, a lot of people would say that the impeachment of Bill Clinton, a womanizer though he was pretty trivial compared to what we face now. And any one of the small peccadilloes that Gary Hart or President Kennedy or anybody else over history might have committed could have deep sixed them if they'd come out, as opposed to the litany of charges, not only about, you know, sexual behavior, but finances and all sorts of charges about funding and corruption and relationships with businessmen. Each individually, in another time, might have been enough to sabotage a presidency. So, it's hard to compare one period with any other. And as far as impeachment right now, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, has said, she said in a very crafty way, which I think was misunderstood, he's not worth impeaching, and we're not going to impeach him unless something would come up. That would push a bipartisan successful move to taking him out of the presidency.
I know that,
so we're really all waiting to see what happens with the Mueller report.
I know that Mike Pence was pretty prominent in trying to pursue the impeaching of Bill Clinton, so it's funny how it's all turned around in that way. I just want quickly, we've only got a minute to the news, just wanted to ask you his relationship with his wife. He's got this strange thing I heard that he will never sit down next to a woman, or he'll never be in the company of a woman that's not his wife, and that's to do with his deeply religious conviction. As a family man, he's obviously, you know, got kids and they've got pets and this regular sort of bloke, but a strange oddity there with his relationship with women in particular.
Yeah, the idea is that he doesn't want to have any possible hint of impropriety, so that he won't sit in any meeting with a woman alone without anybody else being present. And of course, he also has referred to his wife as mother, which is highly mocked around. But although it does have a kind of a homey context in rural Indiana, which seems to work very well.
If he does become president, I wonder how he's going to go sitting with Angela Merkel or someone like that. We've got to go, Peter. It's been very interesting talking to you, and good luck with the next couple of years in American politics. Thanks very much for your time this morning.
My pleasure. Many thanks.
Cheers. That's Peter Eisner there, who's the co-author of a book called The Shadow President, The Truth About Mike Pence. Very interesting. And Mike Pence was our profile person this morning.